WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Christopher Cruz in Phoenix, site of the headquarters of Charlie Kirk's Turning Point USA. People gathered to condemn his murder and reflect on his legacy.
He talked to a lot of people and changed a lot of lives.
This man says Kirk was killed for what he believes in.
It's sad how someone who can express how they feel and how they believe in certain things and lose their life for it, and that should not. It should not be a thing.
Kirk's funeral will take place a week from tomorrow. CBS's Carter Evans says Kirk's widow is promising to protect and defend her husband's legacy.
You have no idea what you just have unleashed.
In her first public comments, Erica Kirk was emotional, but filled with determination that the murder of her husband will not end his life's work.
If you thought that my husband's mission was powerful before, you have no idea. The movement my husband built will not die. It won't.
More than 100,000 people packed London streets today for a far-right rally called Unite the Kingdom. CBS's Haley Ott says it got violent.
Close by, a much smaller counter-protest organized by anti-racism activists.
I'm just ready against racism.
So close at one point that right-wing marchers began throwing things at them and pushing police.
The far-right protesters want the British government to stop allowing migrants to enter the country illegally. Some like it, some don't. People in Memphis are preparing for the arrival of National Guardsmen. Here's CBS's Willie James Inman.
Memphis residents have mixed reactions about the operation.
I'm for any help coming to Memphis to put aside the crime that's going on.
I know it's a lot of crime here, but as far as the guard, we don't need them.
The Washington Post reported about the existence of a Pentagon proposal detailing plans for the deployment of 1,000 National Guard troops to Louisiana for a crime-fighting mission. A Pentagon official told CBS News that leaked documents should not be interpreted as policy.
A new kind of passenger train has come to an area of Southern California called the Inland Empire. It's a zero-emissions, hydrogen-powered train, the first of its kind to operate in North America. Tim Watkins is with the San Bernardino County Transportation Authority, which has been working on this project for 6 years.
It uses a hybrid hydrogen fuel cell battery technology for its propulsion, and it only emits water vapor.
The train is called Zima. It began running a 9-mile-long route today. Barnes & Noble has opened 34 stores so far this year, plans to open 31 more across the country. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
As Wisconsin as a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Baseball tonight. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports from American Family Field, where the Brewers host the Cardinals in Game 2 of their weekend series tonight. The Miz, Jacob Mizorowski, on the mound for Milwaukee against the Cards' right-hander Sonny Gray. The Brewers with an 8-2 win last night over St. Louis. Quinn Priester was asked, since the Brewers have now won 18 games when he's pitched, has he earned a spot as a starter for the crew in the postseason?
I mean, I guess. I think I've done my job this year, and I'm going to continue to do my job. And, you know, I think a big reason we're as great of a team as we are is because of the leadership we have in our coaching staff and our front office and the guys who make those decisions. And so, you know, whether I'm starting a game or being open for or coming in and in whatever role that, you know, they think I can help us win a playoff game, that's what I'm ready for and that's what I'm prepared to do. And, you know, those decisions get made by the people who also helped us get here.
College football, the Badgers losing at Alabama today, 38-14. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy for tonight, areas of patchy fog and lows within a few degrees of 60. Looking mostly sunny for tomorrow, highs within a few degrees of 80. High temperatures stay well into the 80s to start next week, cooling at the end of the week. It's 67 right now.
Pat Kreitlow.
On Monday, Robert Craig from Citizen Action on healthcare cuts and Jocasta Zamarripa, candidate for Wisconsin Secretary of State.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9.
Smokey the Bear.
Then you know why Smokey tells you when he sees you passing through. Remember, please be careful, it's the least that you can do.
It's what you desire, don't play with matches, don't play with fire.
After 80 years of learning his wildfire prevention tips, Smokey Bear lives within us all. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com and remember,
only you can prevent wildfires.
Brought to you by the USDA Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Even though Maggie's out today, we put together some of the best moments from the past few weeks. We'll be back on Monday with more great guests and conversations right here on the Maggie Dawn Show.
From Milwaukee to Marshfield, where passion meets purpose and policy meets people, this is the Maggie Dawn Show.
They're not there to serve you and me and the family farmer. They're there beholden to billionaires and their corporate overlords.
Get ready to challenge the status quo with a fresh perspective on the issues that matter to you.
See our nation fraying and fracturing.
This is not normal. This is not the country that I grew up in.
Breaking down the complex world of policy and politics with clarity, conviction, and just the right amount of fun.
Correct. We know better. We know better.
Clip that.
Lawyer, economist, and fearless advocate for the truth. Here is Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. If you've been listening, you know I'm a big Brewers fan. They just had a four-run inning. They were up 12-5 in the bottom of the eighth inning. I don't know about you all, but I might smell a hamburger in the offing that might be free. We'll get around to the Brewers as that game progresses. I'll keep you up to date. You don't have to go anywhere. But there is incredibly important business of our democracy and for every single citizen of these United States to be paying attention to today. The continuing drama is ongoing in Texas and, in fact, in a small state court in southern Illinois. We've got just the expert to talk with us about the stakes of Governor Greg Abbott out of Texas, his plan basically to execute Donald Trump's direction to cheat Texas Democrats out of their congressional representation in advance of the 2026 midterms. This has set off a firestorm of debate amongst Democrats and good government organizations. And we are joined for the first half hour of today's show by Ruth Conniff. She is the editor-in-chief of the Wisconsin Examiner. She has an incredible background. She formerly served as editor-in-chief of the Progressive magazine. She's written for all sorts of publications, The Nation, The New York Times, and she's here with us this afternoon. Welcome, Ruth. We've got so much news going on with this story out of Texas. I'm so glad you're here. You penned an editorial for the Wisconsin Examiner arguing that Democrats should not engage in a race to the bottom in partisan gerrymandering in response to Texas's attempts to do so and deprive Democratic voters in Texas of their congressional representation. Thanks so much for being here and sharing your views with all of us this afternoon, Ruth. I just wanted to share with our listeners before we get into the meat of your op-ed what occurred this afternoon in Illinois. So there's a bit of detailed background here, but in short, folks, if you haven't been in the weeds on everything that's been going on in Texas, Texas House Democrats fled the state to Illinois a little bit over a week and a day or so ago, and they've been in Illinois ever since. Subsequently, The attorney general out of Texas, Ken Paxton, has issued, has filed lawsuits. Greg Abbott is agitating. And then Republican Texas House members effectively issued arrest warrants for the House Democrats in Texas. And they filed in Illinois state court, in a small state court in the southern part of Illinois, to execute those warrants in Illinois. Of course, Texas law enforcement has no jurisdiction in Illinois, so they had to go to an Illinois court. That court this afternoon denied Texas's attempts to enforce those arrest warrants in Illinois, stating somewhat perfunctorily that this court has no subject matter jurisdiction over the matter. So that is what has happened just within the last couple of hours. But let's get into the meat of the debate, Ruth. Tell us what your view is. And if I've missed or gotten any of those details wrong, please correct me and tell folks why you think Democrats shouldn't engage in this race to the bottom when it comes to gerrymandering.
Well, first of all, the whole drama in Illinois is both fascinating and very familiar in Wisconsin because, yes, of course, we had our own Democratic legislators flee to Illinois to try to stop Act 10, or at least to delay and bring a lot of public attention to that effort. And that has been an ongoing battle that has been at the center of politics in our state now for a decade and a half. And, you know, I think that these kinds of moves by Democrats are really important. I think it's just, we are in an incredible political crisis. It was presaged by the Walker era in Wisconsin, which was also all about incredibly divisive politics and an attack on public institutions and democracy. And, you know, we're clawing our way back in Wisconsin. So I think here in Wisconsin, we have a very special view of this gerrymandering fight that's going on in Texas and now, you know, metastasizing across the country. And that view has to do in part with the fact that we have just now recovered from the worst in the nation partisan gerrymander of our state by the Republicans when they had trifecta control of government in Wisconsin. And the fight for fair maps, which went on for years, flooding the Capitol with members of the public who are saying this is just a fundamental democracy issue. It is beyond partisanship. It's not about which party controls things. It's fundamentally about whether we have a fair system, people have the right to vote, whether voters choose their politicians or politicians get to choose their voters so that they can remain in power. Those were powerful arguments, and they made an impact on the state. And I think we're critical to reversing this insane right-wing control that was really liquidating civil society, starting with schools and teachers and moving through firefighters and public safety and all of the institutions that, you know, are our common interest in protecting in Wisconsin. So we finally have fair maps in Wisconsin after that long, long, long battle. And so now suddenly to see Democrats across the country saying, you know what, we have to fight fire with fire. We're going to pick our own voters. We're going to rig the maps, and we're going to try to reverse the 5-seat gain that Trump and the Republicans can make in Texas by gerrymandering California, New York, maybe Illinois, and, you know, just fight this battle the same way that the Republicans are fighting it. I have to say that for a Wisconsinite who's followed the fair maps fight, to see that reversal is pretty stunning, because it's really, it is an emergency, absolutely. We are living under an authoritarian regime that has no respect for the rule of law. So I think it is reasonable to think about out-of-the-box strategies to try to fight back. But to absolutely give up the moral high ground and to say, we're willing to cheat just as badly as their side cheats, we just have to win political control, I think is a major loss. And I think it's a major loss for a few very big reasons. One is it's just impractical. Republicans control more state legislatures and have more trifecta control of states than Democrats do. And if this thing continues to grow nationwide, at the end of the day, Democrats are not going to win this way. Yes, we can claw back those 5 seats in California. But beyond that, as it moves out across the country, I don't think that this mid-decade redistricting idea is a winner just on pragmatic grounds. But that's really not the most important reason. I think the most important reason that it's the wrong move is that Democrats are in a real crisis since Trump was elected a second time. And that crisis has to do with how did it happen that most voters decided that they would prefer an authoritarian who is going to burn down the U.S. government and all of the historic commitments that we've had as a people to the rule of law and democracy and fair public institutions. How is it that they chose that? And Democrats have to figure it out. They have to figure out how do they make the case to voters that, in fact, this is not the best option that they have. And the Democrats as a group do represent the interests of working class voters in particular who are really attracted to Trump. And I think going along with Gavin Newsom's plan to just rig the game so Democrats can claw back some power is the wrong road in a long-term way for Democrats. And it's super frustrating for people. I get it, because I've had a lot of these debates to think about the long road when we have an emergency right now. But it's the only way that we recover from this crisis in our national politics is that Democrats need to think about, what about all the rural areas of Wisconsin and all the formerly manufacturing heavy districts across the industrial Midwest that they have lost, that were solidly blue and are now solidly red? How are they making the case to voters that they really represent voters? And if the Democrats can't figure out that and can't put all of their energy into solving that, and instead, in the same way that there is an arms race in campaign finance and Democrats need to go to billionaires because Republicans go to billionaires and Democrats need to redraw maps because Republicans redraw maps, that contest is not going to result in a good government for people. And it's not going to result in an ability of Democrats to truly distinguish themselves from Republicans and make the case. So that is my argument.
Folks, that's Ruth Conniff. She's the editor-in-chief of the Wisconsin Examiner. For argument's sake, and just to do a little devil's advocacy with you, Ruth, I have two responses. And one is, potentially, if we were to add up the seats, I know you did the states math, but someone is doing the addition on the seats. Let's say it was pragmatically possible for Democrats to do this. Let's further make the argument that if Democrats didn't do this, Donald Trump will not only be seizing control of the Washington, D.C. police force, but seizing control of police forces based on completely bogus allegations of national emergency in cities like Chicago, Milwaukee, Detroit, and across the country. And let's assume further that Donald Trump continues that declaration of a national emergency throughout the 2026 midterms, and that he uses that control of local police forces and, frankly, U.S. military forces on the ground to quell otherwise protected protests and to intimidate voters in the midterms of 2026. And further, let's assume that he uses not just that militarized military against its own citizenry, not only the seizure of local law enforcement, but his efforts to seize election data in all of these same jurisdictions, as he has been trying to do for quite some time. And let's assume further that by doing this, he is able to effectively wrest control, again, of the House of Representatives and the Senate. And let's assume that his authoritarianism gets worse. In other words, I am painting the Armageddon scenario. Does your analysis still hold? Because doesn't it presume that we will actually have a functioning democracy with representative government after Donald Trump is done trying to wreck it? And if that's not actually true, then doesn't that require meeting fire with fire in this moment?
Well,
and let me just throw one other thing out there. And we're coming up on time, so I'm going to set out this massive hypothetical, Ruth, which I love to do with my guests, and then, you know, go to a short little bit of messages. But let me throw this other pragmatic concern out there, or potential solution. And that is one that Common Cause, and we'll talk a little about them on the other side, mentioned. What if anything that Democrats do in Democrat-controlled states explicitly by legislation requires the undoing of the hyper-gerrymand after the next census? In other words, returns it to the independent redistricting committees. What if that legislation now requires those in states that don't yet have them? Is this not a moment to effectively fight fascism and maybe make independent redistricting committees the standard? We discuss more with Ruth on the other side after my lengthy hypothetical. And each and every one of you, 855-752-4842. Is democracy in the balance? Do Democrats need to fight fire with fire? We discuss more on the other side. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. It's 12 wins for the Brewers. Free burgers at George Webb's, everybody.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
You've probably heard about investors who got in on the ground floor of a company that grew to be a huge success. But successful investing isn't about luck or genius. Instead, it's about building durability. Here are some suggestions. First, think long term. Most investors make their money over time, not overnight. You'll want a well-diversified portfolio of quality investments and plan to own them for the long term. Next, invest in quality. For stocks, quality is often measured by the steadiness of earnings and dividend growth over time. For bonds, one measure is an investment-grade credit rating with a relatively low risk of default. And finally, build a long-term strategy to provide a roadmap for your investment choices. You may want to make changes periodically, but do it for the right reasons, like changing goals or tolerance for risk.
This content was provided by Edward Jones for use by Clay Kanoki, your Wisconsin Rapids Edward Jones financial advisor at 715-421-0958.
Ladies and gentlemen, pets, imaginary friends, take a listen down memory lane and spread the 411 with 97.5 FM WFHR's Unlabeled, your 90s mixtape. If it was released from 1990 to 1999, we will play it Sunday nights 8 to 9. Send me your requests with your beeper, or maybe DM me on the socials, or email me james.maloff@civicmedia.us. Sunday nights 8 to 9 on WFHR's Unlabeled, your 90s mixtape. Booyah!
You wanted to be cool, which led you to smoking, which led to a pack a day. Then you met that special someone, which led to starting a life with them, which led to wanting to live longer, which led to quitting. Then you heard you may be at risk for lung cancer, which led you to getting a low-dose CT scan. If you smoked, get scanned. Talk to your doctor and learn more at savedbythescan.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Snakes, zombies, public speaking, the list of fears is endless. But the real danger is in your hand when you're behind the wheel. Distracted driving is what's really scary, and even deadly. Eyes forward, don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Come work with us. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Even though Maggie's out today, you still have a chance to qualify with Free Ticket Friday. It's your chance to see the Brewers take on LA on Thursday, September 18th. Just open up your Civic Media app and text the word CREW, C-R-E-W, before 5 p.m. That word again, CREW. Now back to the best of the Maggie Dawn Show.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. In case you missed the breaking news, Brewers just logged their 12th win. It'll be free burgers from George Webb for everybody. Last time this happened, they gave away 168,000 of them. But we're talking about the important business of democracy first here today with our special guest, Ruth Conniff. She's the editor-in-chief of the Wisconsin Examiner. Gavin Newsom has announced this big press conference for tomorrow, talking about fighting back. We're debating whether or not Democrats should, frankly, fight fire with fire. Greg Abbott, governor of Texas, following marching orders from Donald Trump and his billionaire overlords, has said they're going to redistrict away at least five seats from Democrats in the state of Texas, effectively depriving Texas voters of their right to choose their own elected officials. And now Democratic states are thinking about doing the same. Ruth just penned an op-ed in the Examiner, which we'll post to our show notes from today, saying Democrats should not engage in this race to the bottom, mutually assured destruction, if you will, that we need to resist those impulses. Before the break, I posed to Ruth a very lengthy hypothetical. I will summarize it by saying, what if this is the moment of Armageddon? What if this is Donald Trump really locking in fascist or authoritarian control? What if that is this moment? And further, what if Democrats could engage in this responsive, hyperpartisan gerrymandering with caveats in that legislation or in companion legislation that requires that to be undone at the time of the next census and locks in independent redistricting committees. California's already got that. That's wonderful. But what about that hypothetical? What if we're really looking at over into the abyss, Ruth? Does it change your analysis?
Well, first of all, I understand your passion and I agree with your sense that this is an emergency and goddamn it, we want to see the Democrats do something, as we're all having it within progressive and Democratic circles. It starts edging into a debate about, well, should the Democrats just roll over or should they do something? And I guess that I understand the desire to see something done. That doesn't mean this is the thing. So for your hypothetical, I don't even think it's a hypothetical. I think we're there. I think we are at this Armageddon point. The question is, what's the right thing for the Democrats to do? And just because this is the first sort of big, loud, high profile thing that people are feeling makes a difference. You know, Cory Booker setting the indoor record for talking while standing up wasn't right. It, right? Nothing came of that. So this feels like, okay, here's a thing that could work. But I just don't think that that actually means that this is the way we rescue democracy. We rescue democracy by persuading people that they actually want democracy, for one thing, and by offering a party that represents that. So saying, well, we have a party that kind of represents that and we'll do so in the future. And after we eliminate all the safeguards for fair maps now, we promise we'll restore them later. But just right now we need to do this thing because we don't actually have the votes. You know, that's not the way you do it. You know, that's not a persuasive argument for democracy. And I think having people really stand up and cohere and feel that they have common interests and that they, across their many cultural differences, which the Republicans are forever exploiting, right, actually do want to stand together and have a fair society where they actually have a say in their government, I think that requires not saying, but the way we're going to do that is we're going to have these politicians who are in safe seats, who don't have to be responsive to the voters for so long as it takes to get us to the other side of this authoritarian problem. Because the authoritarian problem was a long time in the making, and it's not going to be undone by having three Democrats in safe seats in the House of Representatives, nor are those Democrats going to be able to stop all of these things that you're talking about. I mean, Trump riding in to cities, and the cities he's reeled off are all Democratic cities led by Black mayors, not a coincidence, right, sending in federal troops to seize control of those places. We need a majority of Americans to recognize that for what it is and stand up to it. And it's not going to be because somehow magically with a narrow majority, the Democrats are going to get a spine in the House of Representatives. I don't think that's going to be the thing that turns the tide here.
Let's explore, because this to me is the scariest moment that we've been in, especially given what's happening with the election data that he's trying to access, as well as, frankly, turning the military against its own citizens and trying to seize control of local law enforcement. And there are decisions coming down, and some today, where courts seem utterly confused and frankly kind of feckless in the face of their constitutional role to be a check on the executive branch. If there's no democracy left, then what are we fighting over?
We have to fight for democracy, and we have to engage the many voters who are not voting at all and who don't see a clear enough difference between the two parties. And we've got to insist on that. We need the courts desperately. We've had some really important court decisions that have reined in this administration a little bit. It's been the only thing that's been effective so far. And, you know, we really have to band together and make it happen, man. We need real leadership, visionary leadership.
I mean, the decision out of the DC Circuit Court today on the USAID impoundment was just shocking. And if folks don't recall this, the Impoundment Act was enacted following Richard Nixon's refusal to spend appropriated funds on certain environmental remediation and regulation. It led to the Impoundment Act, which basically said if Congress appropriates, a president can't refuse to spend it. You have to go through rescission. And there is actually language in that act from 1973-ish, I think, that says this shall not inhibit parties' claims or defenses. And yet the Supreme Court, the DC Circuit Court ruled that, yeah, if you were supposed to receive that money, you don't have standing to sue. I'm concerned about this moment, Ruth. How do we get people into the streets? How do we do better? We're going to keep discussing. Ruth, will you come back soon?
Yes, I certainly will.
Let's keep this discussion going. Folks, you're going to want to stay right where you are. We've got Representative Ann Rowe, a newish assemblywoman in Wisconsin. We're going to discuss her road to her elected office and her thoughts on these very issues. Up next, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Locally grown radio, WFHR. As Wisconsin is brats on the grill for a tailgate, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
CBS News Brief. Turning Point USA says a public funeral for assassinated political activist Charlie Kirk will be held next Sunday in Glendale, Arizona. This mourner was at the Phoenix headquarters of Turning Point, co-founded by Kirk.
He showed you that it's okay to stand up for your beliefs. It's okay to go against the opposition when in reality, like, we're the winners, and that's the reason why people are attacking him.
Memphis residents are reacting to the news of President Trump sending the National Guard in to help fight crime there, with some critical.
It ain't nothing to get under control. It's just a city. It's a city we stay in.
This is to make a statement that he is in charge to intimidate citizens.
A large anti-immigration rally in London organized by far-right political activist Tommy Robinson featured a video appearance by Elon Musk.
What I see happening is a destruction of Britain.
Some demonstrators clashed with police officers. CBS News Brief, I'm Michael Toscano.
Baseball tonight. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports from American Family Field, where the Brewers host the Cardinals in Game 2 of their weekend series tonight. The Miz, Jacob Mizorowski, on the mound from Milwaukee against the Cards right-hander Sonny Gray. The Brewers with an 8-2 win last night over St. Louis. Quinn Priester was asked, since the Brewers have now won 18 games when he's pitched, has he earned a spot as a starter for the crew in the postseason?
I mean, I guess. I think I've done my job this year, and I'm going to continue to do my job. And, you know, I think a big reason we're as great of a team as we are is because of the leadership we have in our coaching staff and our front office and the guys who make those decisions. And so, you know, whether I'm starting a game or being open for or coming in whatever role that, you know, they think I can help us win a playoff game, that's what I'm ready for and that's what I'm prepared to do. And, you know, those decisions get made by the people who also helped us get here.
College football, the Badgers losing at Alabama today, 38-14. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Superman and Lex Luthor teaming up together? What is this world coming to? Before you know it, cats and dogs will be living together. Variety has announced that the sequel for this summer's hit Superman is in motion. If you thought the first one was a spectacle, the follow-up promises an even bigger nemesis will face off against the unlikely duo. James Gunn's Superman, starring David Corenswet, made $613 million worldwide and was a big first swing for the DC Universe, a company where Gunn currently serves as co-CEO. James Gunn says the sequel will be as much a Lex Luthor film as it will be a Superman film. The director says he loved working with Nicholas Hoult, who played Luthor, and really identified with the Luthor character. Yikes. A couple other tidbits from Gunn's Superman world. The director says Supergirl, starring Millie Alcock, is on the schedule to be released in 2026. Superman, Man of Tomorrow, will start filming in 2026 and be released in 2027. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Download the Civic Media app in the Google Play or Apple App Store and take us everywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy for tonight, areas of patchy fog and lows within a few degrees of 60. Looking mostly sunny for tomorrow, highs within a few degrees of 80. High temperatures stay well into the 80s to start next week, cooling at the end of the week. Currently, it's 66.
Using meth taught me everything about freedom, only not like you think. It taught me how easy it is to lose your freedom. If you think meth is taking control of you, ask for help. You have the power to be truly free. I know. I'm Jan, and I'm free from meth.
If you or someone you know is struggling with meth, call 1-800-662-HELP for 24-hour free and confidential treatment referral. Learn more at samhsa.gov/meth.
You wanted to be cool, which led you to smoking, which led to a pack a day. Then you met that special someone, which led to starting a life with them, which led to wanting to live longer, which led to quitting. Then you heard you may be at risk for lung cancer, which led you to getting a low-dose CT scan. If you smoked, get scanned. Talk to your doctor and learn more at savedbythescan.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Maggie Dawn.
We're joined at 5 p.m. by Wisconsin Democratic gubernatorial candidate Ryan Sternad. We dig into why he's running and what he proposes for Wisconsin's future.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Even though Maggie's out today, you still have a chance to qualify with Free Ticket Friday. It's your chance to see the Brewers take on L.A. on Thursday, September 18th. Just open up your Civic Media app and text the word CREW, C-R-E-W, before 5 p.m. That word again, CREW. Now back to the best of the Maggie Dawn Show.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. My thanks to Angela Lang from Black Leaders Organizing Communities who joined me, as well as my friend CJ, conservative caller on the phone. We've been talking about, you know, it occurs to me, and I appreciate CJ's willingness to call and engage with me on the phones here. Even though I'm trying to focus in on these particular points that I think a lot of conservatives get really uncomfortable talking about. And I want to say at the same time, I think a lot of Democrats are really uncomfortable talking about some of the complexities of public safety. We were talking, if you're just joining us, about Donald Trump's statements today that they are definitely going to Chicago. There was a federal court ruling that the use of federal military for civilian law enforcement in L.A. violated the Posse Comitatus Act. There's a lot of action in this space at the moment. And the place that I wish we could all get to is an understanding that, yes, you need police, and we need sufficiently staffed police forces, but police is, and whether that's a military presence, which again, military people, those are war fighters. They are not properly trained for civilian law enforcement purposes. But can't we have a discussion where we can actually talk about public safety challenges and what really truly works to build lasting safety in all of our communities? Because we all deserve that. And not resort to this, the kind of, I think, dialogue that I hear a lot from the right, which is Donald Trump is God, everything he does is just fine, and a refusal to deal with the two-facedness of much of the Trump administration's policies when it comes to public safety. Do not tell me that Donald Trump is a great crime fighter when he pardons cop beaters. That's not a consistent position. And the only way that you can make that make any sense is when you simply understand that what Donald Trump is doing is, by creating false divisions in our communities, specifically targeting Black and Brown communities, and he's doing that to target communities that oppose much of his agenda, that it is literally about politics and not about public safety. So my thanks to everyone for engaging in what I think needs to be a much more dialed back and tuned in conversation about very, very real results. And that needs Democrats to sometimes change their language, their message, and their thinking about how to build bridges. Well, speaking of one of those bridge builders and change agents on both messaging and substance, I am so delighted, quite excited, to be joined by State Senator-elect from Iowa's fighting 12th District, excuse me, 1st District, Caitlin.
Number one,
the 1st State Senate District, Caitlin Dre. You just won an absolutely landmark election. This represents a basically 20-plus point swing from the November 2024 election, where your state Senate district went about 10 points for Donald Trump. You swung that. You won your election just a week ago. Was it just a week ago? I lose track.
A week ago today.
Oh, yes. My. Well, it's congratulations.
Thank you. So it's been a wild week.
Yeah, so you're a plus 20 swing. How did you do it? What was different about the message that you think made a difference to voters in Iowa's first state Senate district?
You know, I think I had the unique opportunity of being like an extremely online candidate. I spent a lot of time on Instagram, as detrimental as that is to our mental health, right? But I talked to voters instead of at them. And I think that made the biggest difference, truly. We spent a lot of time just talking about how to make a good life in the state of Iowa. And that's gotten more expensive, whether it's housing, healthcare, or childcare. And all three of those things are necessary to have a good life no matter where you live. So I think that message translates, you know, into a more national conversation. But really the takeaway, and if you want to call it a blueprint, it has to be speaking to voters and not at them.
Mm-hmm. It's so critical. And I think just laser focus on the issues that really impact everybody's day-to-day lives. And it is fun for someone who does the job that I do on the radio to have political arguments about this rhetoric and that rhetoric. But at the end of the day, when I talk to friends that are trying to raise kids or younger people that I know that are trying to buy a home for the first time, and folks that are just trying to make it work, that's the obstacle. The overwhelming sense that I get for people is, pardon the use of the term twice, how overwhelmed they feel and how unseen they feel. And when I spent a bunch of time like looking at your campaign website, Senator-elect, and some of your social media feeds, and it was markedly different. It looked different than a politician's website. You sounded different. And I was like, oh, God bless this woman and her team. I encourage everybody to go check it out. Kate, first of all, and we'll put all of your social handles and your website from your campaign in our show notes for today. But I think, again, it's not just about talking about the things that make people feel overwhelmed. It's how you talk to people. Tell me a little bit, and we hear this all the time, don't talk at people, but with them. Tell me what that actually feels like and how you did that. Big online presence. But how did you do that when you were just in the retail politics of Iowa's first Senate district?
Well, I think like I said, being online, that's the first thing.
Yes.
But I kept saying over and over again, like, I'm just a regular lady. Just a regular person running for office, which is a feat, right? It's extremely difficult as a young parent, right? I have, she'll be 5 on Friday, and my husband and I both work full time. This process is not designed to help people like me succeed at running for office. But one of the things that I really, really pushed on, even when we were developing the messaging, was this sounds like every other political ad I've ever heard. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't work, right? That's not working to turn out Democratic voters right now, to turn out
any
people
voter
to vote for. Exactly, right? Yeah, I'm like, to turn out any voter. But when you talk about removing the label of R and D, and I've said this before, Democratic policies are winners. People want to be able to afford a home. They want the wealthy to pay their fair share in taxes. They want to have access to healthcare that is based in science, that their doctor is not being interfered by some random politician who they've never met, right? And I just, we have to get back to using regular words, speaking to people, right? It's like this, we like message test and try and like perfect things, and voters can see through that. And to say like, oh, voters this, voters that, we're all people. We're just people like trying to build a good and beautiful life. And at the end of the day, we all pretty much agree on what it takes to do that. It's just like, how do we connect the dots to get from, you know, the horseshoe, right? How yes. do we get from all the way up here on the horseshoe? Most people are down here at the bottom.
Yes.
How do we connect those dots and have that conversation and get out of this like yuck bin nastiness that we're in right now?
I also think some of it, you know, in reading up on your race and your election, what occurred to me is not only do you sound unpolitician, you feel not like a politician. And I mean that getting beyond the words, the people that I have seen be able to be highly effective in mixed districts or districts that seem to have big swings are people who feel genuine. When you're in a room with them or you're listening to them talk about things, it just feels real, as opposed to, again, overly consultanted and message managed candidates.
I
also think that this needs to be addressed. You know, one of the big pieces of news from just today is that Congressional Representative Jerry Nadler, who's been in Congress for 32 years, is not seeking re-election.
He said just talk really quickly.
Go ahead, Caitlin, please.
I will be 38. That's the entirety of my life, right?
Yeah.
Insane. Like, what are we doing?
To your point, he said this decision has not been easy, but I know in my heart it is the right one, and that it is the right time to pass the torch to a new generation.
Yeah,
I think people are sick of voting for the same candidates over 35 years.
And so, like, that's the thing is, like, Congressman Nadler, what a beautiful legacy of work, right? That's so important to recognize. And there is something so beautiful in a leader that can say, I have done what I can at this point. I would love to see more of that, right? Like, there are a lot of people, and it's disproportionately, right? I don't have the facts and figures, but it's disproportionately on the Democratic side that we are under this gerontocracy, right? And there is, and this is, I think, part of why we have a hard time attracting younger people, even to that grassroots level, is because we say, oh, what can we do to turn out young voters? What can we do to engage young people? And then they show up and it's like, this is the way we've always done it. This is the way we're going to keep doing it. How does that widen the circle, encourage more people to show up? When it's like, no, you have to earn your stripes. When what we see on the right is just this consistent investment in, you know, outside money and outside kind of like the Joe Rogans and the Turning Point USAs and
the young voter. Yes. They do. They have specific. I mean, our former governor runs one of those. Ahead, Caitlin.
But they give money to people and say, do what you think resonates with your audience. And so now we're trying to play catch up in this way that's like, you know, how do we get there? And it's like, just let the young people do the young people thing. Like, it's not rocket science. We have to stop with this like meritocracy, gerontocracy, all of it.
And it'd be one thing if it was a meritocracy, like if we were closer to an actual meritocracy, right? Which I think is the thing that you're getting at.
Yeah.
What Congressman Nadler was perceiving, I think, is the need objectively on its own for younger candidates that can reflect, energize, communicate on the platforms, in the lingo, in a way that feels genuine for younger voters. I'm going to just say the thing that might get me in some hot water. Dear Democrats in these seats that have held them for decades, take a look at your record. Take a really hard look in the mirror. If you have yet to accomplish what you set out to do as an elected official, maybe it is time for you to pass the baton to a new generation, as Representative Nadler said today. We're going to continue this fascinating discussion with Iowa State Senator-elect, a 20-point swing from November. I'm so pumped for her and the first Senate district in Iowa. Stay tuned, everybody. We're going to be right back. I'm Maggie Dawn. We continue to talk about how to build bridges and get that tent even bigger by energizing young people.
Reach, engage, grow with Civic Media. Log on civicmedia.us/advertise.
School sports are played by humans, coached by humans and officiated by humans. So the next time you're sitting in the stands at a school athletic event, please remember this and maintain your humanity, especially when it comes to judging and critiquing athletes, coaches, and officials. Please show your fellow humans some respect. They'll appreciate your empathy.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
There are so many traditions built around the Wisconsin Badgers, game day and the mascot, which in 1889 was a real badger. It didn't go well. Eventually, the animal was replaced by a person. An on-campus contest chose the official mascot name, Buckingham U. Badger. Still, Wisconsin's official animal is a badger. But do you know which animal almost earned this title instead? Gray squirrel? White-tailed deer? Black bear? The answer is coming up. The original badger's nickname is actually associated with lead miners in the state, not the animals. It was the 1820s, and the miners often didn't have shelter in the winters, so they lived like badgers, digging tunnels into the hillsides where they worked. So was there almost another state animal? Yes, the white-tailed deer, which later became the official wildlife animal. But the history surrounding the badgers is a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
When it comes to making plans, you are the best. What about those round trips that you plan in advance, which are perfect on your way there and perfect on your way back? Or those meetings with friends for which you make a group chat 3 months before so that nobody or anything is missing? Or your daughter's first birthday party. You planned it with such dedication that instead of the first, it felt like our quinces. The same way you plan each detail for those moments. Start planning to protect you and your loved ones from a natural disaster. Sign up for local weather and emergency alerts. Prepare an emergency kit and make a family communications plan. Protecting your family is the best plan you can make. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
I'm Scarlett Johansson. My family relied on public assistance to help provide meals for us. These meals fueled my involvement in theater and the arts as a child, which fostered my love for acting. The Feeding America network of food banks helps millions of people put food on the table. You can join the movement to end hunger by donating, volunteering, and advocating. Because when people are fed, futures are nourished. Join the movement to end hunger at feedingamerica.org/act now.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Connecting audiences, powering brands. This is Civic Media. Learn more at civicmedia.us/advertise.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Even though Maggie's out today, you still have a chance to qualify with Free Ticket Friday. It's your chance to see the Brewers take on LA on Thursday, September 18th. Just open up your Civic Media app and text the word CREW, C-R-E-W, before 5 p.m. That word again, CREW. Now back to the best of the Maggie Dawn Show.
Welcome back, everybody, and welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. I'm the host of this, the Maggie Dawn Show, here across the Civic Media Radio Network, now coming to you in three states, not quite yet to Iowa, but we've got a great guest from Iowa.
So close.
Her name is Caitlin Dre. She just won an absolutely upset, eyebrow-raising, framework busting election in Iowa's state Senate district number one. We're talking about what Democrats haven't been getting, what the consultancy class hasn't gotten. Mm-hmm. During the break, you and I were talking about U.S. Senator Joni Ernst. Just let them eat cake or go ahead, get busy dying. Senator Ernst. She formally announced that her intention not to seek re-election. You had some reactions that fits exactly within what we're talking about here.
Yeah, I mean, the video was just not great. She sounds so rehearsed and so robotic. I had another kind of colleague, grassroots volunteer. She sounds like AI. And it's just like, go stand near an open window and just talk to people like they are people, but she's very clearly reading from a teleprompter, which I, you know, like, you should have notes. You should have, you know, you should know what you want to say. That's fine. But it's just, it's robotic at best. And I think that's where we've lost people, right? Is just like, speak to people like they are people. We have to like get back to our neighbors. And we were talking during the break, it's like, I think, especially when you consider folks that have been doing this politician job for a lot of years, they've closed their ranks around themselves. They're surrounded by only their team, who is in the echo chamber. There's so many degrees separated from voters that they've just forgotten how to speak to people. And I was trying to remember, because I mean, I'm Senator Ernst has served two terms, so total of 12 years, right? Which was her campaign promise. She said she would only serve two terms. So I would offer some commendation on keeping a campaign promise, because that's, especially when you talk about tenure in that way, that's not something that happens. You know, you get in the Beltway punch, and it feels good to be close to power, and
especially
in
senators
power.
They
honestly
have this very exalted
stick around.
I wish our
look
senator,
at our other look at our other half. Chuck Grassley is 90 years old.
90.
He's older than the chocolate chip cookie. Did you know that?
Oh, Caitlin, I'm filing that one away.
If you're so bad,
if you're older like, than the chocolate chip cookie, maybe America needs a new cookie. You know what I'm saying?
Oy. Listen, I love an Oreo as well, right?
Yes.
But I
delightful.
Think what's so, I think, so it's like, I loved my grandparents when they were alive. My grandmother passed away when she was 90. Mm-hmm. I would not have wanted her making decisions about grand policy. And, the same can be said for how I feel about Chuck Grassley. Like, I'm sure he is a lovely, delightful grandfather, but please retire.
Yeah, to put it in slightly different terms, we want people to bring their life's experiences to bear as elected officials, right? So I don't want exclusively young people or middle-aged people, but it's important to say, hey, if you've held these seats for three decades plus, and we have an overweight to folks that are older and wealthier in many of our state houses and our U.S. Capitol. The
you
question
can't
has to
relate
be asked, who experiences are left out? Yes.
Well, and like when you talk about the wealth inequality and the disparity between the working class and those people at the top, I think that age gap also speaks to why we are seeing so much policy that is geared towards benefiting the very, very wealthy, because that's the life experience that you know, boomers and above have. And so it's not really surprising in that regard. And it's just, it's frustrating because we have not seen that transfer of wealth, right? That's how boomers were successful. Their parents planned and bequeathed. And now there has just been this like stranglehold on money and property and power in the older generations, leaving people like me, younger people, and politics is one of the few places that I'm still considered young, but leaving us to try and claw back or hang on to whatever we can find. That's why housing is expensive, because it's not as available, because we have people with, you know, multiple properties it's all these threads that like you start feeling a little bit like a conspiracy theorist, but it's all connected.
Well, and the idea at base, right? And I've heard this from many folks of a certain age, more of whom who say these sorts of things tend to be more conservative. Well, I did this, I worked hard, blah, blah, blah. And then I explained to them my life's experiences and explained to them what I've done in work or share some other experience. And I'm like, some of these people haven't yet been able to afford to purchase a home. And it is mystifying, because 2 plus 2 equaling 4 for that prior generation, many of whom worked their Kutuzov defended us in World War II. It's not translating. It's mm-hmm. 2 + 2 = -1 now. And people are wondering why there's such disengagement and disillusionment.
Really quickly. I know the biggest thing is the minimum wage has not kept pace. If it had, minimum wage right now would be $28 per hour. And it's in Iowa, it's $7.25.
That is the perfect illustration.
Yep. Yeah, that's all it is, right?
It's an insanity. We welcome Caitlin Dre to the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh,
Iowa's state senator elect for District 1, a game changer in her own right. We hope to see more of it, not just in Iowa and Wisconsin, but across the U.S. Stay tuned. We're going to talk vaccines and what you can do with the school year starting to keep your family and children safe. I'm Maggie Dawn.
This is locally grown radio.
WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Progressive Insurance.
I'm Michael Toscano. With suspect Tyler Robinson behind bars and facing charges in the assassination of political activist Charlie Kirk, his background is now under scrutiny. CBS News correspondent Andres Gutierrez is on that in St. George, Utah.
Neighbors tell me that Robinson did have a roommate, and they mostly kept to themselves. On Friday, the FBI hauled away several boxes of potential evidence. Cameron Turnbow is a neighbor.
Sad. Just my heart breaks.
What do you think of the parents doing this?
I just break. I break for the father. However, I also commend him as a man and a father to be like, look, you did it. You got to turn yourself in.
Turning Point USA says a public funeral for Kirk will take place next Sunday in Glendale, Arizona. Romania became the latest NATO member state to report a drone incursion into its airspace today as it scrambled aircraft over Russian strikes. BBC's John Sudworth has more.
Russia.